Blog Talk Radio. Everyone to the Wise Women Media Show tonight. This is our mic check show. Me and Gwen, say hi, Gwen.
Hey, how you doing there? Mic check. Hey.
And we are going to be doing a review of what's been happening with Occupy on their six-month anniversary. We want to thank our sponsors before we get started. Here Be Monsters, Roundtree 7, Daughters of Isis, and the Hoodooed blog. There's been crazy things happening across the country. We've also had some very sad news, happy news. The happiest thing that's going on right now is the spring equinox coming in just, tomorrow.
And a few hours, Darlin.
Yep, so Persephone's rising, and it's a time for all new good things. Get your plants planted, and that's figuratively as well as literally. But we want to go right into the news, and I'm sure, Gwen, you've heard about this young man that was shot by a neighborhood watch person.
Yeah, I
think it was in, was it Sanford or Sebastian, Florida?
I'm not sure. I just saw it about 2 hours ago on the news the first time walking through. I've been out of the house, so I wasn't up to date on it. But it was a neighborhood watch fellow.
Yeah, and it was a young black kid. He was only 17 years old, never had been in trouble before. His name was Trayvon Martin. Tonight on WMNF, Rob Lori, one of the news people, actually part of the Last Call program at 5:30, did a playback on some of the police tapes when this neighborhood watch guy had called the police to get direction on what he should be doing next, talking and saying that this young boy looked dangerous, he was reaching for his waistband. The neighborhood watch guy was directed by the police to remain in the car and don't try to engage the young kid. Well, it turned out the young kid didn't have a weapon. He had a bag of Skittles in his pocket. He had just come from the store and was walking home in the rain. And this was a gated community, and the neighborhood watch guy shot him in cold blood. This has sparked a number of protests across the state. A lot of people are calling for this young man, the neighborhood watch guy, who was 28 years old. His last name was Zimmerman. I can't think of his first, but they're talking about actually arresting him. He shouldn't have had a gun if he didn't know how to use it. For one thing, you don't use a gun on somebody.
What's the neighborhood watch person doing with a gun? I didn't think they had permission to carry a gun when they were on neighborhood watch, only pepper spray and radios.
Well, that's what I thought, too, because we have a neighborhood watch here in our community, and they don't carry guns. So
this is tragic.
Yeah, so this is
so
just
tragic, but Anita,
yeah.
I got to ask you, don't you think that with the discourse that this young 28-year-old man is seeing on the television amongst what we are calling leadership in this country, that it's not so surprising that this has happened? I'm talking about the xenophobic war on women cavalcade of ridiculousness that is going on as our public discourse in an election year. And, oh, by the way, get the black man out of the White House.
Yeah, well, this is fear-driven. It's policy-driven.
Yep.
It seems to be like standard operating procedure with the police now is to shoot first, ask questions later. So if you're watching this on television and you're seeing this in the news, you know, television is fiction, folks. Come on now. So now this gives anybody permission to shoot somebody in cold blood, whether or not they've got a weapon on you. And this, there's also another law that I wasn't aware of until today when I started researching this, Stand Your Ground law here in Florida, where if you feel like you're being threatened, you can stand your ground, but that doesn't mean you can fire your weapon indiscriminately. So so I'm not understanding how this could even be justified and how this guy is not in jail. That's my concern, is why is he not in jail?
Wow.
So anyway, if anybody wants to look up the story, it's Trayvon. It's spelled a little unusual, T-R-A-Y-V-O-N. Last name is Martin. I can't remember whether that was Sebastian or Sanford, Florida. I'm going to try to look it up here. So, Gwen, so give us a little update on what you know, what's happening with Occupy, like say here in Florida. Have you received any updates from any of the different
Florida
locations?
Not really. I know that Miami has been busy, but I'm not quite sure what they've been up to because I've been paying attention more on the national side because the last 2 weeks have led into the 16th being the anniversary of 6 months, and it's been primarily Miami and down here. I don't know what the specific actions have been, but it's been about working towards the foreclosure issue with
right.
Bank of America
in Tampa with Tampa Occupy site. They've been doing and they've had these foreclosure teach-ins, and I think some of them were conducted at USF. So a lot of the people that are at the Occupy Tampa, some of them have been victims of foreclosure themselves. So this has been
a big issue
here, since this is one of the biggest metro areas probably in the country for foreclosures. So now, of course, the modus operandi is to keep the people in their homes as long as possible. So I know they've been doing that in Miami, but the last news I heard about Miami was that they got the SWAT team in there. So
the upcoming event for Occupy Miami, they got blown back pretty hard. You know, they were arrested. And the brutal nature of the people to push them, you know, just a few arrests can make a huge difference on a smaller crowd. It's not like ours. Though they've had some good crowds there, when those arrests went down, Occupy Miami kind of broke up from its center down there. Now, Roots in the City Garden Outreach, it's going to start on the 26th. And it's going to be at 11:30 a.m. And that's the Roots in the City Garden, Northwest 10th, between 2nd and 3rd Avenue. And it's also the Monday GA at 6 p.m. at the same place. But there's a Roots in the City Garden event planned. And let's see. Excuse me. Yeah. So we have events at Occupy Miami on the 21st, the 23rd, the 26th, the 24th, and all the way to the 28th, nothing on the 29th, the 30th, and 31st. Most of them are General Assembly. The actions that they're doing are mirroring ours. Or Occupy Wall Street. That's how we got there. Occupy Wall Street has been focusing on classes, foreclosures, and getting their toe back into Zuccotti Park. You've heard, of course, about the last 2 days.
Right, right.
They've asked. They're asking, the call is going out, too, from Zuccotti Park, from the people who are remaining there, who keep going back. One of the large requests is that people skip work on May Day. Of course, that's a big day. We've known that was coming, right?
Right. Oh, yeah. We knew that. I knew that was going to be one of the biggest days. You know, it's the workers' day. It's the workers' day.
Yeah, it's
day.
A strike. It's general strike for the whole Occupy movement, May 1st. Very, very social. It stretches from Occupy Oakland down to Occupy San Diego into Occupy Denver and Austin and Boston and New York and Miami. And everybody is tag teaming and saying, yes, we're going to be involved in it. The Occupy Together site is brimming over with that news. So it's a general strike for May Day.
Now, with our calendar with Occupy Tampa, it looks like there's calendar events all, you know, every day, all day. The General Assemblies are usually 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock at night. It looks like, no, 7:30. It looks like 7:30 is what the time is now. There's also teach-ins for, you know, the strategy being prepared for the Republican National Convention, which will be here in Tampa in August. So that's going to be a real big time. Of course, Tampa will be inundated with all those lovely people from the GOP, and it will also be inundated with many, many protesters from all different kinds of groups, affinity groups from everywhere, in addition to Occupy. So it's going to be a huge, huge happening here. I'm not sure yet at what extent I want to be involved. I don't know if people are going to be staying with me or, you know, exactly what is going to happen, because it's really too far in advance for me. So my plans change by week. So,
well,
you know.
The May 1st Occupy I'm going to attend with my little group. We were evicted out of West Palm Beach and brought back here to the little park that's on the waterside close to me. And I intend to attend that event. We pretty much have the permission of the city to do that, to fill the park, as long as we're, you know, good kids and we don't tear anything down. I have to say that the South Florida Constabulary here in Palm Beach County has been really, they've been exceptional. There's not been brutality here, you know. They've been nice. They've been supportive. You know, when we were at Bryant Park to begin with, they came over on their little, what do you call those things with two wheels and a pedestal on it that you turn it with and everything?
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. They get around on those, and they were over there. There were three of them over there on those, and those modes of transportation, whatever they are, and one guy on a bike, four of them, and three of them were like, yeah, what you're saying is true. That's all correct. You know, they were, like, involved a little bit in supporting what was being said in the General Assemblies over there. So I have to give them some kudos. Now, that was the Palm Beach County Sheriff's Department. That's not bad. Then moving down in, and West Palm Beach Police took over as the constabulary. Down in West Palm Beach, when we were out near the out in the middle of the lawn in back of Bradley's, right on the Intercoastal, the end of Clematis Street, in a very premier location in the heart of the city, close to the big money, if you will, stayed there. They were camping out. I did not. They camped out there for a couple of weeks, I don't know, about a month, and then they put them back into two blocks back into the old city on a pavement parking lot, old parking lot. And from there, there was an eviction notice after two, you know, I guess we were there like 3 months. And then they they moved it down to the abandoned old, on Banyan Street, the abandoned old, City Hall. And they went up, there's like a ledge, it's like very Art Deco building. They got on this ledge that was above the portico that you go through to get into the building, and they chained themselves up there with the eviction notice. And the arrests were finally made by the West Palm Beach Police Department. And, you know, it got a little nasty with the mayor of West Palm Beach. So we've backed our back into Bryant Park here in Lake Worth. So there is a synopsis. The Occupy, Palm Beach County Occupy Group, has been very consistently, you know, anywhere from 20 to 50 people going down for the large actions in Fort Lauderdale and Miami and backing that up.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we've been working. So that's our local story here. It's not the, and also I should say every large action, of course, out of ours we mirror.
Right. So give us an update on, I've taken a look at Occupy Wall Street, and it looks like they had quite a lot of things going on and a lot of events planned for this past weekend. I think the most, maybe I can play this. This was an interview that Jesse LaGrega, one of the Wall Street organizers, gave just 2 days ago. And he was talking about how Occupy has, the whole movement has gone into a phase two. Let me see if I can actually cue this up and
that
we can take
be,
a
that would be an excellent one. It's been about solidarity in
right.
reconnecting to Occupies since last week. It's like a regrouping. And it's the sound of our feet hitting the streets again, I'll tell you. That's what it is.
Well, he's got a. This guy had a lot of interesting stuff to say, and he was really quite eloquent in listing the whole purpose of Occupy and why Occupy even exists, and what the future has in store for the Occupy movement. So let me go ahead and play this. I think I've got it queued up.
Sure.
So excuse my my rudimentary knowledge of radio technology. Give me just a moment. Here goes.
6 month anniversary of the day Occupy Wall Street all began. And for 6 months, we've been bringing you stories from the front lines, from New York to Washington, D.C. to Oakland, California, and more. This is a movement that has evolved greatly and shed light on issues like wealth inequality in America, failures in the financial system, and police brutality. But we also wanted to have a better understanding of the Occupy movement itself. So for the last several months, we've been hanging out with one guy, the same guy, 24-year-old Washington, D.C. resident Joel Northam. Now, I knew right when I met him that his passion would fuel his patience, that he was in this for the long haul. And it turned out I was right. 6 months on, Joel is still...
That is the wrong interview. So the one I was trying to actually get to was Jesse LaGrega. So let me see if I can get to that one, because it's really the one we want to hear. So give
you want me to fill time while you're looking for it?
I got it. Here it is.
Okay.
Some leaders, people who have stood out and have spoken out to help get some of those central messages across. Joel, of course, was one of them. And another one is Jesse LaGrega, an active participant in New York's Occupy Wall Street. And he's in our New York studios now to give us his take 6 months on. Hey there, Jesse. How is this chapter, chapter one you could call it, written in your mind?
Well, to me, I kind of look at things in phases. So to me, the beginning of the protests, moving on through the eviction of New York City's occupied territory, I call that phase one. That's the waking up moment. The idea that these problems just began immediately when President Obama was elected is absurd. We have a broken economy that's, for the last 30 years, undermined the working class and benefited only the wealthiest of the wealthy. So people respond when you talk about that. Since the evictions of the occupied territories, we've moved more into what I call phase two, which is addressing the larger issues. To me, at the end of the day, this is about changing laws. This is about creating a framework for an economy and a political system that benefits everyone, not just the people who can afford lobbyists. So I see a transition, but a very welcome one, because the reality is it's now or never.
How are you finding those challenges, I'm sure they are, in terms of having some of those laws change, in terms of kind of upending the system?
It's a big fight, but it's one that needs to take place. I mean, I know several different Occupy Wall Street protests in different locations have passed resolutions against the Citizens United decision by the Supreme Court to allow money to equal speech and to let the big corporate interests totally have outsized influence over our elections. This is basic, not just American principles, just the principles of democracy itself. One man equals one vote. If $1 equals one vote, the people who don't have dollars will be voiceless, and that's just not a democracy. So to me, the challenges are huge, but the important thing is people are willing to take this fight up. And despite the police violence against Occupy, despite the press smears against us, we still go on. If anything, it speaks to the fact that my generation wants this change, and we're not going to take no for an answer.
And what do you think have been some of the most effective aspects of the movement in terms of getting those messages and those desires across?
Well, you know what happens when you have an entire generation of educated people who can't find work? They have to find something to do with those energies. I think some of the actions we've taken to occupy foreclosed homes are tremendous. It really points out what the problem is. The fact that there are so many homeless people in America, and yet we have houses vacant because we have a financial system that literally makes up things as they go along. The foreclosure fraud scandal that the Obama administration just settled, it was $25 billion. $25 billion worth of fraud. That hurts the marketplace. To say that regulations hurt the marketplace more than the fraud does is absolutely absurd. But when it comes down to it, there are a lot of different tactics to take. The government has done what they can to suppress freedom of assembly. I mean, I think a lot of people participating in Occupy didn't realize that we don't actually have these freedoms. You know, you try to use the freedom of assembly, and then you realize, oh, it's free as long as you don't try to do it. Either way about it, the fights against us are huge, but the fact that we cannot ignore this fight is what's very important.
Well, what about
a whole generation of people jumping out into the streets to do something about it is really inspiring.
And Duffy, it's not just sort of the observations that you and others have made about society and about the system, but I guess I wanted to talk more specifically about Occupy Wall Street, about the movement 6 months in, failures and successes in terms of communicating, you know, sort of the wants that you have and the changes that you want.
Well, it's difficult because there's so many different voices out there. I think the hardest part of what we're doing is coming to a big consensus to say these are the things that we need to fix first before anything else. I think one of the good things about having this grassroots movement is just having that conversation in the first place and taking the nonsense conversations and pushing them aside. Someone up in Occupy Boston put together a study asking people within the Occupy movement which issues matter to them most. And it turns out the deficit is at the bottom of that list. National debt, bottom of the list. Austerity, budget cuts, bottom of the list. The things people want to talk about is jobs, protecting consumers, creating a sustainable economy that works for 100% of us, not just the wealthiest 1%. And it's not easy, but it's important. I think there are some things personally, I'm not speaking for anybody other than myself, that I don't like within the Occupy movement. I think the blank the police thing is a bad move. If I weren't an occupier and I saw that, I don't think I would respond to it positively. I think there's some brilliant things that we do, though. Recently, they had a protest against Bank of America. Some protesters brought their living room furniture into the bank and set it up and told them, well, you stole our home, so we're going to live here from now on. I think that stuff is brilliant. I would love to see more of it. So I would say that we have our growing pains. We don't have millionaire lobbyists or advisors, and I wouldn't want them if they were offered. It's a lot of hard work, and I think it speaks to the fact that even with high unemployment, people are willing to do the work, but we demand decent pay, too.
It's really interesting, Jeff, because you are, of course, one of dozens of occupiers that we've spoken to here on RT. And most of you say, often refer to Citizens United, as you did just a moment ago, and that case sort of being a profound wake-up call in terms of the problems with this system, with democracy in this country. Here we are. It's 2012. It's an election year. We're in the process of what's been a pretty long GOP presidential primary, and of course in November we'll have the election. Anything that you've seen already so far in this election cycle that's either troubled you or given you hope?
There's a little on both sides. There's been a couple bills offered. There's one bill called the Occupied Amendment, which is a constitutional amendment to reverse Citizens United. Now that one I love. There's some really, really bad stuff, too, though. Many Republican Party officials in states that are controlled by the Republican Party have been pushing a slew of bills to reverse voting rights, to make it harder for minorities, elderly people, college students to vote. It's basically Jim Crow 2.0. And the idea that the guys who scream about economic freedom, we want economic freedom, but they want to make it harder for you to vote, to me, I find it entirely un-American and very disturbing. To me, I think, if anything, America has always benefited when we've expanded rights. When we expanded rights to African Americans and then to women and then the civil rights movement, every 30 years we have to expand our rights a little bit more, and the days are coming back to that. So the idea that some people are out there fighting to make sure regulation doesn't suppress commerce, and at the same time they're making it harder for people to have rights and easier for corporations to have rights, I think history will frown on that years from now.
How's it looking there in New York? I mean, obviously Zuccotti Park was sort of the initial center of the occupation. Is it still pretty common to walk around and see signs of Occupy Wall Street in New York?
a bunch of our friends were just at Ducati today holding, I think it was training sessions for a number of issues. People are still out. They're walking down by Wall Street. As the weather gets nicer, we're going to have more general action. You know, I've heard the phrase from the military, the beatings will continue until morale improves. I kind of feel the same way about the economy. The reality is if we were to go away, these problems would still exist. And if we get on the streets and try to do something, we can create the political pressure necessary to get these laws changed so that we can bring back Glass-Steagall, bring back the firewall separating commercial banks from investment banks, taking back all of the basic protections that consumers had in the economy that protected the larger economy altogether. So there are some good things within the political sphere. I like to see the fact that we're talking about a millionaire's tax, a Warren Buffett rule I think is a good idea, a return to the or going to the Volcker rule would be a good idea. At the same time, there's a war on women. We can obviously see that. They would love to. The people who don't want to have this conversation about fixing the economy, the people who like the way it is broken as it is, they don't want to talk about this. They would rather talk about anything else.
All right.
It's our job as activists to push the envelope.
Certainly it's been a very busy 6 months for you, Jesse LaGreca, activist and writer for The Daily Coast.
So what did you think of that?
Well, Occupy Wall Street is a leaderless movement.
I thought it was pretty clear. And after all, Occupy Wall Street is about, you and I have maybe side agendas that we're more interested in, say the Gulf or the planet, and getting rid of that. But it all begins with the corporations and their stranglehold on society and leadership through money, through the banksters and everything. So Occupy Wall Street, and remember, that's a big message with ALS, too. This is a global phenomenon. It is not today. In solidarity, Occupy groups all over the world are holding solidarity for the, I think now this is a third eviction for Amsterdam. They're threatening them out there again. Do you know how long Occupy Amsterdam has been sitting in front of their stock exchange? All through the winter.
Wow, how long?
All through the winter, they have been out there. I mean, their winter this year, because of the obvious screw-up with the Gulf Stream, they've had a real they haven't had a winter like they had this year in Western Europe or any of Europe in, I read 800 and some odd years. It
wow.
was really, yeah, there was feet and feet of snow in like Somerset, England. You didn't get that's unheard of. Never heard of that. I don't even think that happened. Did that happen 500 years ago? And I just, it's crazy. And of course, here in this country, you know. I diverge off of the subject. It's about the banking. It's about the money. It's about the corporations. It's that ALS is always Occupy Wall Street is always going to be anchored in follow the money. You know, that's where the leadership, the politics, the changing of laws, it's all going to come out of Occupy addressing and protesting and throwing it against the money.
One of the major coups we had this week, and it was an interesting day down at the Tampa City Council. That's for certain sure, but, you know, I went there the other day and basically had found out that they were going to do a vote on Citizens United / corporate personhood. And the legislation bill was introduced by Mary Mulvern, Tampa City Councilwoman, and Councilman Reddick. And it was an interesting day because when I went in, they were also going to be voting on a resolution for domestic partnership and another resolution on backyard chickens, which seemed to be like a really big issue in Tampa. So
is that religious, or is that, you know, because with Lukumi and Santeria and all kinds of
It's a big issue because, you know, it's a religious, but it's also backyard chickens for food and eggs. So So,
yeah.
You know, you've got wild chickens running in Ybor, probably because there are some people that, you know, their faith is Santeria, and the chickens must run free.
Right.
But in any case, when I went in there, it was the whole Tampa City Council meeting room was filled with gay couples and permaculture people. Some of what I knew, you know, people from each group. And then the actual resolution for Citizens United Corporate Personhood wasn't coming up until, like, we were, like, number 81 on the agenda. So we were, like, way down the list. So everything got voted in. Corporate Personhood was voted in very close to 3 o'clock or a little bit after. I can't remember. I was so excited. They had just barely any conversation, and then they voted, and it was unanimous. And I was just ecstatic walking out because I had sent every single Tampa City Council person an email about this on the 17th of February.
Yeah.
So, and then Mary Mulvern had made the comment that she was going to be introducing this because of the amount of emails that the Tampa City Council was getting. So the next thing on the agenda, of course, is county, and then on to state. But if we can get these local resolutions done, then the local resolutions will be what takes precedence with government at the local level. So, you know, all government is local. So whatever the feds do, they can do whatever the hell they want to do. You know, the resolutions have already been made within the local government. And it was an amazing day. I was very happy. I thought, I worked so hard on this, but it's not done yet, you know. We have to keep going with it. And you're right.
It's good to hear positive.
Say that again?
It's good to hear a positive report. It's very good to hear a positive report. There's a lot of intrepid people out there who are interested in finding out what the real idea is behind these people that we're seeing the sound bites for, and the other side of the fence, should we say, like the GOP. And there are a lot of intrepid people. I've been focusing most of my informational feedbacks on the social scene or through social networks on Twitter recently for the last, 3 weeks. And I'll tell you what, first of all, I get a whole lot more news and news that I'm interested in, whether it's ecology, environment, owls, the election or what's going on abroad. It's all, you know, in there. Plus you're watching a bunch of celebrities give their opinions about what's going on. And you'd be surprised because, you know, George Clooney was arrested yesterday, I think. Was it yesterday or the day before?
It was a couple days ago. They were out, him and his father were, and several others were outside
several
of
Democratic representatives. The Sudanese embassy in Washington, D.C., and talking about the mistreatment of I can't remember exactly, children, people, certainly over paying for army to be substantiated, and when people are starving and la la la, they were there to protest. They got arrested. You saw him tweet that he was going. You hear people tweeting their ideas. Of course, you know Roseanne Barr is all over Twitter with political tweets right now because she's actually running for president.
Right, right.
We have got
Roseanne Barr running for president on the Green, you know, with the Green Party, And we also have Dr. Jill Stein running for president with the Green Party, two green women running.
Yeah.
And, you know, people might think that Roseanne Barr running is a joke, but a lot of people don't know that for many, many, many years she has studied feminist politics and was part of a women's collective for a long, long time. And,
She's definitely, you can tell that she's anchored into, well, she's a matriarchal presence, even on Twitter. Now, I have to mention Frances Fisher. She's an actor.
Right.
And director, I believe. But she's on the Twitter with Holland Taylor. These are two women who have some formidable character going on. They sling it out there the way they see it, but with a certain amount of class, I got to say. And Frances Fisher went over, she's in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, right now for some kind of filming. And Mr. Santorum was giving a speech, so she went over to listen to see what the heck he could really be talking about. I think she wanted to take a pulse of who this guy could really be that would be so, ridiculous. And I admire that kind of enthusiasm that would go, you know, put the sunglasses and the baseball cap on and go and stand in the crowd and listen to find out what the heck is going on, you know? How long has it been, Anita, since you've attended the opposition?
Oh, my. I've got to think.
There's something to be said for that.
It was probably the first days of the Occupy Tampa movement, you know, when we actually were downtown and, you know, and the police were right across the street. So, you know, but
well, you
what was nice in the beginning, the Tampa police started out pretty nicely. But then as the encampment grew and, you know, they got more support and people were staying overnight, then it got really crazy and there was arrests. And now the Occupy Tampa group is in a private park. So they're somewhat protected. Actually, it's owned by Joe Redner. Who himself is a political person and has run for local office.
So this is
interesting that they're in a private park and now they can do these things, like have these teach-ins for the foreclosures and, you know, really
all the occupiers are doing it, yeah.
Yeah, I meant to tell you, I looked at the calendar for Occupy Tampa for May 1st, and there's some kind of concert being planned. Now, there's not any information on that yet, but it says to be announced. So as soon as there is information about that, I'll make sure I post it or the information goes out. But I think a concert might be something really nice for May Day, and I'm sure they'll include speakers and, you know, large gatherings.
The primary is general strike, meaning that you don't go anywhere towards making money or spending money on May Day. If we could just get, you know, the concerned progressive slice of the community to pay attention to one action, it would be thunderous across the land. It really would. You know, there's a lot of progressive people that are Democrats and independents who are what they say they are. They're progressives, but they're not as activist natured as yourself or myself. But there are many different ways. I saw it written down by our good buddy Tricia Poole, P.E. Nolan, up in New York. Now, she goes down and supports Al's when they're underway, and she puts the Punk Patriot up when he's visiting for Al's and attending, and also Dennis Traynor, who are two important people to this movement. Dennis Traynor is out there, and this is a great resource for people who might be listening and want to know, in a nutshell, with a bit of talent, what is actually going on from the very beginning to up to the moment in Occupy, the Occupy everywhere across, not just America, but global. You'll get that information through it. But we have a chronicler with the film in Dennis Traynor Jr., and you can find him at, you just Google Dennis Traynor, that's T-R-A-N-O-R, Jr., his site is No Answer for That, I believe. That's one of his sites. He's got two now. He has so much film that he is editing and putting together. It's really going to be quite exciting, the documentary that he makes. And then there's the compatriot, Asher Platt. And he's running. He's gone to run for state senator.
Right.
In Maine. And he's documenting on film his whole experience with it, while also being an Occupy activist. And by the way, Asher Platt is one of the most erudite, sane, well-spoken, and to the point with an incredible wit. He really, his films, what he has to say, are point on every issue. And the sanity that he talks about in action and changing things is just incredible. So the Punk Patriot, and all you have to do is Google Punk Patriot, and you'll find Asher. He's just
now,
absolutely,
those of you that are
incredible,
listening in, that want to find out who these people really are, because I had the privilege of working with them and meeting them in person, Asher Platt, the Punk Patriot, worked with me on the Kucinich campaign. So when you look up the Punk Patriot, you're actually looking up Asher Platt. That's P-L-A-T-T-S. And Dennis Traynor was known for the fantastic videos during the 2008 election. And later on, he also became staff with the Kucinich campaign, but he was known on YouTube as Davis Fleetwood, and that was his name at that time. And he put out some fantastic videos just about the discourse of the elections at that time, what the Dems were doing, what the Republicans were doing, and really, really amazingly
actually,
videos. In fact, I think at one point on YouTube, he was the 17th watched person on YouTube.
No,
and when we took the bus through New Hampshire, and we were all on the bus with Dennis, and of course Davis Fleetwood was with us, but he was also using that name before he came on the campaign, but his name was Dennis too, so it was confusing. So when he got off the bus, Davis would come off first so he could record Dennis. And there would be a huge crowd just going, Davis, Davis. So it was pretty funny because everywhere recognized Dennis Traynor as Davis Fleetwood. So you can still see those videos up on YouTube.
Okay.
And if you want to go back, interesting history of that election. So
He's putting up new videos just about every other day, and he has an official Occupy podcast now.
Oh, that's I followed him on Twitter with that. I can't think of the name, but I just followed him just the other day when he posted under that, and I saw his name. I said, well, I better click into this and follow him so I know what's going on. Definitely, if I can find it, I'll try to post it. Let me see
these
if I can find it under
really
followers.
Good. These are really excellent resources for people who are interested in knowing what's going on with Occupy. And, you know, there's small towns where people, two and three people at a time, I mean, there have been a lot of Occupy groups. And
they've faded back, you know, and they're wondering what the heck is going on with the larger Occupy community. Well, it's really important for folks like that to remember that being on Twitter is extraordinarily helpful. And go and follow Occupy Wall Street and Anon Ox and Dennis Traynor and Asher Platts. If you go and follow those folks, you'll start to see who else, you know, to follow, and you'll get up to date by the moment about all the actions that are going on. I can't tell you, I see so many different actions, Anita, every other day, or sometimes there's two and three a day from major cities all across the country and from Europe, out of Britain, out of Spain, out of Amsterdam, Ireland.
So if they try to tell you that the Occupy movement is fading fast, they're full of crap, because it's not. It's getting bigger.
Oh, goodness, no. It is
getting
not.
Bigger.
It is.
More people are starting to understand that they need to do something and they need to be a part of the conversation. Because if the Occupy movement has done anything, it has made all of these issues within, well, global, not just our country, but global. These issues that people have been wondering about for years and years are now part of the conversation. And I think the easiest way to get more clued in, too, and I've found it just completely releasing for me, is to get rid of the television. Just don't watch it. Get online and hear news.
A lot of folks, especially political folks, would feel absolutely like they didn't. Of course, they would hook into a lot of what they get off of the TV in the computer.
Yeah, I mean, I thought, you know, this is ridiculous. I'm getting everything I need from my computer, and I'm paying $140 a month for cable. Just for basic channels, and well, it was a bundle plan. It included my phone and it included my internet. But I thought, I gotta tell you here.
You learn interesting things. Like I was watching earlier today. I thought, let me catch some news before I go on with Anita. So my one present to myself this year was an inexpensive HD television. And my cable has the HD channels up at the top. And so I'm watching the news with MSNBC. And that's supposed to be the progressive large network channel. Exxon commercial comes on and tries to tell me how sweet it would be, this African-American scientist fella comes on, starts talking to me about how sweet it would be to take that beautiful Canadian shale oil and bring it on down here, all the jobs it'll bring. I mean, this is a BP commercials on this channel. Come on and tell me about what a wonderful job BP has done in keeping their promises to the people of the Gulf, and a complete recovery has happened.
What a joke.
I mean, this is why I was telling you, you got to back off sometimes, and you're quite right about the television, because of stuff like this, it'll just drive you batshit when you realize 11,000 people are sick with what we're calling the Gulf disease. But the CDC won't come and categorize it, because that would mean that BP could be held liable for more, which they should be. They're not really being held liable for anything, really. They're paying out some money. They're paying out peanuts so that they can dribble out as little as possible until the end. This is how all big oil companies do after a large spill. It's their playbook, you know?
People need to know that not a single health claim has been paid out. Not a single health claim for the thousands of sick people in the Gulf of Mexico region. So people are getting paid out for loss of business or, you know, other factors, but it's not for their loss of health.
And that's
kind of the biggest factor.
That's true. And, you know, you started out our conversation this evening talking about Trayvon.
Trayvon Martin.
Trayvon Martin. Mm-hmm. And I have my browser open to my Hootsuite, so I'm watching the Twitter feed. And one of the people I love following, because she's such a great heart and she really retweets a lot of really wonderful things, Mia Farrow just tweeted that her 20-year-old son is African-American. He sometimes wears a hoodie, and he loves Skittles. I tell you what, the Twitter feed is a happening place. It really is. It gets weird.
I wanted to make this announcement as we were talking about Dennis Traynor before I forget. You had mentioned his new OCCU podcast. Okay, this is spelled OCCUPODCAST.org. And that is also the website. So that's how you'll find him on Twitter, OCCUPODCAST.org. And the website is OCCUPODCAST.org as well. So make sure, if you're listening, to give him a follow on Twitter. And check out his website, because I'm sure whatever he's doing as far as video or writing anything, he's posting it there on the site as well. So yes, I've been watching a lot of people on the Twitter feed, but I signed into Hootsuite like you suggested, and I haven't finished up what I need to do there. So I need to get back on that and get signed in so I can. Keep more of more clued in with what's going on with Twitter and the social media. So explain to me how Hootsuite works.
Well, give Hootsuite a boost here. What it does is it's a board that enables you to keep your eye on several feeds of social networking at once. For instance, for no good reason altogether, but one's a business and the other two are personal. I have three Twitter accounts, so I keep an eye on all three of my Twitter feeds. Then I have my Gwendolyn Holdenberry Facebook feed and my business, Daughters of Isis, Inc., Facebook page. And then I have my Journey with Roundtree 7 group, and I have my LinkedIn feed. There's a feed from LinkedIn. I never knew until I got Hootsuite. And I post on it. And then all of the groups that I enjoy on Facebook I get all those feeds on Hootsuite. At the same time, I can post things, scheduling them. Like I can take a picture of product and put a little tweet and something that's good enough, and I can post it on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and on several group pages as a commercial, as it were, and schedule it to go out on the 12th of August at noon. While people are at lunch, maybe looking at their Twitter account. It'll be in the feed. It also has this wonderful analytics capacity, and it'll tell you how many people are hitting your tweets when you sell products out at the marketplace, right, Anita?
Right. Yeah, because I use quite a lot, actually. Yard seller, eBay, there's quite a few that I do just to get products out,
And you can actually schedule
take a picture with your camera and load it, and you can actually schedule a picture and a little advertisement to go out and schedule ahead for, 2 weeks.
Wow.
And
well,
I'm
going through every single
there.
I'm actually doing it right now, and it's actually giving me every Facebook page that I'm on.
Yeah.
Every single page that I've created, which
yeah.
is kind of wild, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And it only costs $6 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that only is a false word to use for any of us making our own way in the world these days. But, you know,
uh-huh.
hey, we're plowing the road, honey. We're plowing the road. But Hootsuite is a wonderful tool, especially if you're somebody who's an activist, a networker. You know, you've got a group of people on Twitter that you keep current with. You can put tweets out at a certain time. It's pretty wonderful. I've gotten so I can tell who are the experts. Like, there's a wonderful person to follow. She's a Unitarian minister down in I think she's in Tamarack here out in West Broward. She's a Unitarian minister. Her name is Naomi King, and you can find her on Twitter under Rev Naomi. And she tweets the most amazing positive stuff. This morning, first time I looked at Twitter, I saw this question by Reverend Naomi, which was, how are you growing a more generous civic community? That's really good stuff, you know. And I said, I hope you don't mind if I repeat that on the show tonight. And she said, oh, of course I don't. And then she said that the question was related originally to Parker Palmer's work, Healing the Heart of Democracy. And I went and I looked, and it's a wonderful place. You know, now, not all of us are out there with, you know, our wands at the ready, dear. I mean, you and I are, but most people are, you know, they want to vote right, they want to be conscious purchasing, but they don't want to get arrested in the street, or, you know what I'm saying? There's all kinds of progressives. And I always remember, because of folks like Reverend Naomi on Twitter. She drops the most positive stuff down.
So I'm looking at my feed now. So this should be wow. It's really cool when you pull up the Twitter. That's really quite amazing. I like the way they integrate. You know,
they really do, and it's a wonderful tool for anybody who's working in the Occupy movement, because you know if you want to get information out there, you want to stay fresh, this is going to help you. You know, you can go and look. I don't know if you're like me, and I've got a Mac, and I basically am having some problems with Facebook. It the scripts run slow, so a little sign comes up, and I've got a Mac. Doesn't seem real, but it's happening on Facebook. So Facebook can get a little trying for me lately. This is just a lately thing, and it makes me wonder what's going on with Homeland Security and Facebook. That's another conversation. But on Hootsuite, I can go over here, and I can take a look at my Facebook feeds, and I get a news feed. Most recent, I get a news feed of photos, and then my wall posts. You know, that's a lot.
Yeah, it is, and I'm looking at how it's laid out. So, if any of the listeners out there are curious about it, I would just encourage you to go to Hootsuite, sign up, try it out. If you don't want to try it, you know, if you don't like it, you can delete the account, but it's kind of like it's a one-shop stop for all your social networks in one place, from what I can see, and I like the format.
It's really And I think what it does is it gives you a responsibility. It gives you a better responsible nature with how you're managing your social networks, so you're not stepping all over yourself, because I've done that a few times, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So did I tweet that? You know. So it's a wonderful tool if you're communicative like that. It's a wonderful tool. Then there's people who just have one Twitter account. They love and adore it. They work with it, and that's it. And they do a grand job at whatever they're doing with their Twitter account, or they're just having fun. But I'll tell you what, the social action, and we learned that in the last couple of weeks. I learned it very intimately. The social action really has thunderous consequences. It really does. I'm talking, of course, about the Coney incident.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
I
got emotionally manipulated by the film. The guy didn't commit a fraud, but he was on the wrong side of that story. And
he was making money to produce a film and to make the film. He produced it. He had a good idea, but he had to be paid to do that. So, you know, that,
well,
you know, maybe it's possible
it
that he didn't. It's possible that maybe he didn't have all the facts, but, you know,
I think he did. I think he did. I think he's been working on it for 10 years and not getting as far a reach as he wanted. So he just went full bore push, and I think he's paying for it right now. Did you hear about what happened to him?
Yes, he ended up on a street corner, I guess, in, was it San Diego, ripping his clothes off, doing all kinds of crazy things in public.
Yeah, it's a little wasted, yeah.
I kind of doubt the story that he was working on it for 10 years, because what I did read about him was that he's 33 years old, so I kind of doubt that he actually would have. The money to produce that film and for him to do all the traveling he did, that would have had to come from, you know, somebody with a lot of money.
Well, apparently, I mean, according to the film, he was over there when he was, you know, just, he was in school. He was a college kid. And, you know, that's where the whole thing started. But
right, right.
I'm definitely not going to fence with anybody about this story. I have looked for all of the due diligence on it, and I posted it. And I found this wonderful blog by a Ugandan lady. Did you see Bluebell's blog?
Yeah, there was a story of a young woman. Well, it was a video of a young woman, very strikingly beautiful, who was Ugandan. And she looked, I guess, I gathered she was a student. I wasn't sure.
She's a chemistry. Well, if you're talking about the one I posted below online, she's the one everybody's been listening to too. A gal by the
they
name
weren't
of
sure
Lillian.
Whether Coney was even alive. And
they can't say for sure whether he is alive, but the Ugandan government just released their own video day before yesterday, where they admit they know Coney is alive. And this is a government, mind you. I self-identify as bisexual. I had an affair with a broad a long time ago, whatever. The thing is, if I walk into Uganda, you know, as a photographer, as an ethnobotanist, anything that I do, walking over that border, you know, I can be put on death row.
Yeah. That's their laws.
I mean, shit, honey. That's just weird and ridiculous. And it's basically an American-influenced idea. We know this from watching Rachel Maddow. She did a really wonderful series of articles on this. And, in fact, the guy she just, Imhoff, that I didn't think that was such a hot interview that she did, that last one, but she got the goods on Imhoff being over there and supporting this venue for the Ugandan government. And basically the Ugandan military, who I guess the guy in Russell, Jason Russell, in the film that we saw, he was extolling that the army of Uganda, which is, some people say, just as bad as Coney's or worse, you know, go after Coney, and it's like, this is really screwed up. So my point is, how many millions of people have seen this film now? How many different well-intended celebrities were supporting this at the very beginning? I mean, the social action, we have come to the day. We are in the era of the social action. That's what I think I'm trying to say. We're in the era of the social action. And there's consequences.
Right.
You know? There really are. There's consequences. There's consequences for everyone involved in it. Really. If you retweeted this, or retweeted or posted, or you supported this, and then you come to find out that you were manipulated, you know, by believing what was being said and not, you know, not knowing all the facts, you know, that's a shame, but you need to take responsibility for it. Do you follow where I'm going here with the social action thing?
Well, I think that this, we know that there's a new command called AFCOM, and we know that Libya and, you know, the Arab Spring and Egypt and all of these things were just the beginning of things that are happening in Africa. Of course, North Africa more in the Arab world and Africa at the same time. So we're looking at reasons to sway public opinion to get our troops over there. So they're fighting for, what are they fighting for? Not for peace, not for giving the Africans democracy, which is a big joke. They're there to smash and grab the natural resources. We know there's uranium there. We know there's gold there. We know there's oil. There's also conflict minerals such as diamonds. But there's also the newest thing that, you know, the empire is going after is lithium, which powers our computers and our cell phones. So there's got to be a reason to go in it. There's got to be a reason that there's got to be a lot of reasons, and we know there are, of why NATO troops, including Americans, including French, including British, smashed Libya into the Stone Age. There's got to be a reason for that, and it's not because we wanted to give them democracy. There's a reason why we went there and we dropped depleted uranium on the people. So,
is that something that's been factually? I'm asking you. I don't know.
Well, Cynthia McKinney was there. She's the one that reported on it. You know,
Dang.
She was the one that, you know, she knew when they were dropping depleted uranium because she could taste it in her mouth, and she made that comment. You know,
how can we do such a thing to people?
Well, this is like I've told people, this is like way past empire at this point. I really do believe that in many respects we're way past the tipping point on what we can do as people, as peace-loving people, to stop the empire from going on, and whether it's us that turned or public opinion or whatever, but it's so blatantly obvious why we go to war now when our troops are guarding poppy fields and oil wells. I mean, come on, that's ridiculous.
Well, now they're trying to bend this fellow Bales who, you know, went nuts and killed innocents. They're trying to turn it on to its ear and say that there was provocation in the fact that he was probably overworked. He had burnout from being on too many tours. I mean, it's all very excusory now. They can't believe all of his neighbors are saying they can't believe it's him. And this is on the Progressive Channel.
Well, let me say something to that, because the original reports that came out stated that there were bands of soldiers. They don't know how many, but there were many of them, and by many I mean more than 10, that went into this village at 2 o'clock in the morning, and that they appeared drunk, and they went from house to house doing the shooting. So now all of a sudden it's one crazy person that caused this whole incident. You know what I say to that? Excuse me, but this is my radio show. Bullshit. Because
well,
what sounds more realistic to me is that these guys got fired up, they got drunk, they're sick and tired of being sick and tired, they want to be home, they've been indoctrinated with how evil these people are that are, you know, from the host country of where they are. I'm going to tell you something. As a veteran myself, we were never...
Yeah, you're a vet.
We were never, ever indoctrinated with the evilness of the host country of where we were. We were taught to respect. In fact, we had a lot of classes before we would deploy to a specific place on things to do and not do and the culture of the people and some preliminary...
Yeah, you sound like
space.
My little brother.
Yeah.
He was Air Force. Yeah.
Yeah, and we were taught all of that before we even got on the plane to go. And we were taught to respect... I mean, I had many, many friends that, you know, in fact, I could have left the base and just lived very comfortably in Athens, Greece, with the people that I knew and people I hung out with. I probably could have gotten work. I probably could have stayed there for the rest of my life. I really loved it there at the time. This was the early 80s.
Greece is a great place to be.
Yeah, so this is a situation where these guys were drunk, they were fired up, and it sounds a heck of a lot more realistic to me. How could one guy have gone into four or five houses shooting up families without being stopped by the men that were there?
That just wouldn't have happened.
That's not even realistic. So it sounds to me like it was a gang of them. They were drunk. They had their weapons, and they just decided they were going to do a shooting free-for-all. And that's what they did. And all the foreign reports that I read stated that it was 20 of them.
Basically, what's happening here is this country is not only defeating us, Afghanistan. It's not only defeating us the way it has outsiders for many, many millennia. It is also establishing a relationship with us that says, look what kind of bastards Americans are. Look what their military has done. Look what they did in Iraq. I mean, of course, you could look at Vietnam and kind of say things like that, too. You could say that about any kind of action, I suppose, but I think that the Iraq War and Gulf Desert Storm, too, and this Afghanistan war, these wars are making Americans seem like just something I never. We're base. We're going in there. We're torturing people. We're going in there. We're taking out. We're using drones to take out innocent people. These are people. These are not, you know, the fights are between leaders, and the leaders inflicted on people.
Right.
Just got to stop. And I think that an incident like this brings the opportunity, especially among people in Occupy movement to, you know, there are a lot of vets who feel the same way that are part of Occupy, you know?
Right. This is why I feel that, you know, in weighing all of this, in weighing, these are secret wars. Well, they are secret because we're getting information on lamestream media news that, you know, NATO troops are going in. Even in the beginning in Libya, they were talking about NATO troops on the ground in Libya working with Al-Qaeda to quash the rebels. Okay? So since when did Al-Qaeda start working with NATO? Now, we can always go back to what Cynthia McKinney says about Al-Qaeda, and she says Al-Qaeda is simply CIA's Rolodex. She's made that comment many, many times. I would say Al-Qaeda and NATO, and this is always from foreign news reports, and according to Cynthia, there was no rebellion in Libya. The people there were decimated. Everything there was decimated. Everything there was destroyed. But then the thing she started to report on that still hasn't gotten out into the mainstream media news is the fact that the Arabic Libyans then started to lynch the black Libyans. And that was really the only kind of, you know, rebellion that she saw, you know, in Libya, as far as any kind of rebellion or infighting.
I gotta ask Anita. I mean, you and I, we eat this stuff up because we want to know what's happening, because it's part of our activism and how we go about wagging in the world who we are. So for
right.
us, it's something we're interested in. We care. It's part of our activism. But a lot of people are just hearing headlines. They don't even have the time. Their mothers and fathers, or their people going to school and working, or you know what I'm saying here. You really do have to plot out the time to educate yourself almost on a daily, like, for instance, today's headlines include how Stockton's poor. I just pulled up Huffington Post. It's the California nightmare. Stockton's poor, mired in violence after the police cuts from the recession. How many small towns in America are going through that right now? And it's not on the MSM at all.
Exactly. This is why it's so important to have to actually be the media. We have to be the media.
I agree. Yes. I mean, and especially when you're hearing direct from what it's supposed to be. I mean, there's very few. You can go to Democracy Now! On Link Television. I still listen to Keith Olbermann. He's still doing a good job as far as, and so are the Young Turks. But other than that, I mean, I see Rachel Maddow as someone who just, you know, is wiping the president's ass, if you will. I don't mean to crap up your program, Anita, but from my
That's
point
okay.
of view, Rachel Maddow is just there to wipe the president's ass for the liberals anymore. She seems to be... she isn't Doc Maddow anymore. She's some other entity. But she does good. She does a good job very often. I think the last true progressive on MSNBC is Chris Hayes, and he has that morning show on the weekends where some good information comes up, but you can almost see him roll his eyes when he has to sell something he doesn't want to. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right, right. I find it necessary to know what's going on in my world, and I don't know if it's because I have an Aquarius moon and the world itself is my community. I don't know, but people who have, you know, Aquarius prominent in their astrological chart work, well, Aquarius is community and how you interact in a very progressive way with other people. And by progressive, I don't know. necessarily mean political. I mean like new inventions, new ideas, new thoughts, things that other people aren't thinking about, you're already thinking about. And, of course, with the moon in Aquarius, that means community is what I'm passionate about. It's what I get emotional about. So that's the moon thing along with it. So I have to know what's going on in my world. I find it just as necessary for me to have that as water or air or food. I need to know because I can't walk within the world unless I know. And unfortunately, with that kind of placement, that means I get a lot of the icky stuff. The icky stuff comes to me all the time. And I like you had said before, you have to like really cleanse before you create something because you don't want to put that energy into what you're creating. And I find myself in that exact same spot so many times. I have to just completely cleanse. And I find things like knitting and gardening.
Meditation.
Things like that really cleanse me when I need to be cleansed. And just walking the dogs and simple things like that. But definitely meditative. I find like knitting and creating and painting and making jewelry and things like that very meditative.
I'm a creative person myself that way. I'm crafty. I find that's how I get my sanity back. Oftentimes I'll listen to a book on my iPhone, you know, while I'm doing something like that. Or I'll just sit down in my room in the middle of the day. It's funny, I've gotten crazy. I will walk in for some reason. This is menopause. I will walk in for some kind of reason, bent on what I need. I'll get a little distracted, and I'll sit down at my desk, and I'll start making something.
Right.
It's always great. I seem to come out with something good. It's how I got my little ancestor bags going. But still, I live a crazy
Right now,
kind
I'm
of
knitting
life.
This huge loop shawl. It's in a beautiful shade of lavender blue. It's really an incredible color, and it's made with some really soft yarn. So I think I'm on probably close to 4.5 feet right now on this thing before I've got to do probably a couple more feet before I can sew it together, but it'll be like a nice evening wrap over a navy blue dress or something. So I'm thinking, wow, that's
nice.
I could probably knit these like crazy. And sell them on Etsy or something.
Well, there you go. And that's the other thing. We are having to grab ourselves by the tail and really be handmade in this economy in order to survive it, especially if you're one of the people who is working to actively change the society you're in. And I think that that's true for you and I. I mean, it's generally true for people like, and both of us are spiritually minded gals. We come from point of view that, and I don't see how anyone can say that they do not vote with their values, okay? Your spirituality has, or your values, which to me really do reflect your spiritual nature, your values have everything to do with how you are going to cast your vote and how you care or don't care about the leadership in your community. And that's the other thing. It's like Starhawk was trying to bang the drum about, not just the permaculture, but caring and being involved in your community, because a lot of people in the community that I do my business in and go out and do workshops in the metaphysical, New Age, or spiritual community or pagan community, whatever you want to call it, a lot of us folks have sort of isolated, pulled back to our own little groups, our own little festivals, being a part of the greater community and also being involved in the leadership roles. It's the odd man out in that crowd that you would find this. And it's up to people like yourself and myself to walk into that community and say, hey, folks, we need to be a part of the larger community out there and go out and blend. Get involved.
Well, I'm finding that it's kind of, I'm in a situation where, okay, I'm anticipating this crash. I'm anticipating this. I know it's going to happen. The question is when. But in the meantime, what do we need to do to take ourselves from high tech to low tech? I think that's really important. That's one of the things, the reasons for the knitting. I'm thinking, you know, what if the computers go down? What if the cell phones go down? You know, we've got to plant food. We've got to have something to wear. We've got to have shelter. You know, what are things that we need to know that are completely low-tech or no-tech? And, you know, definitely herbal medicine, things like that, things that are going to be necessary. You know, because before too long, people aren't going to be able to go to the doctor. They're not going to be able to go to the dentist.
Well, people can't go to the doctor or dentist now. And
right,
that's,
right.
And I don't, I'm not someone who sees a loss of the technology. What I do see a loss of is the finances to run the technology.
Right.
And so if you don't have the money it takes to do it or the business, you know, if you lose your job, you know. In other words, I think we're being forced into an entrepreneurial stance in order to survive. A lot of people are. I mean, I've
right.
been in business for myself, but a lot of people are. There are a lot of folks, a lot of, like, single mothers who enjoyed some security and jobs that are losing those jobs now and have been. And let's talk about the 99ers. They're still out there. They're way out there. They're way out there, you know?
Exactly. I know I want to be prepared, and that's one of the things why I put seeds in pots and I'm growing things and learning how to knit and, you know, talking to people in my community about what we're going to do when we need to do it. You know what I'm saying?
So you're networking with that.
Yes.
You're
networking
with that. And you know you have a group around you that you know you can get together with should things be necessarily in that direction.
Yeah. And I want to be prepared. So... The other thing too is you know, where is a safe spot? Does any of us really know where a safe spot is? We don't. You know, this is just touch and go. You know, I know that I live on a pretty high elevation here in Florida, but Florida is one big sandbar. So you know, if climate change ever really hit us here really bad, a lot of this state would probably.
Yeah.
Underwater, so
yeah, there's a chance that there could be a massive exodus, and out of a lot of the islands of the Caribbean too, the lower islands, the ones I love the best, like the Bahamas.
Right, because one thing for certain, sure, that most people that live in the Gulf region that are aware of what's going on in the Gulf, it's pretty common knowledge among most of us that have been networking that the Gulf of Mexico could be damaged beyond repair. And if there's a fissure,
yeah.
Then anything could happen at any time, because all along that whole area heading north onto the landmass is nothing but fracking. All the way up to the New Madrid fault, the fault line. So with
really?
All the fracking going on and the crazy stuff and the bird kills and the earthquakes where there shouldn't be earthquakes, you have to wonder what's going on out there. And
it's
none of us
really,
will ever know.
It's daunting. It's very daunting. But that's the thing, though. You don't hear this information. Oh, you might hear the odd story about all these black and red birds fell out of the sky in Arkansas, but for the most part, the mainstream media that the majority of people all over the world plug into is telling them pretty lies.
Right.
And
so
you really have to go looking for the news.
Yeah. So we really just we're flying by the seat of our pants and just, you know, waiting for the crash. And unfortunately, I think the crash might take a while. I used to think it was going to happen pretty quickly. But there isn't enough, I don't think there's enough people experiencing the hardship that a lot of us are experiencing. And once they do, once the gas goes up to $5 or $6 a gallon and they can't afford to go to work, things are going to change drastically.
Here's the big overall in this. Overall, oh my goodness, there's no reason for any of it. It's all just based on the illusion of money.
Right, right.
Of course there needs to be some form of commerce. Of course but you know what? It's like Occupy Wall Street says, follow the money. Just a few people that are bent crazy on having it all, you know? There's nothing wrong with making a good deal of money and enjoying it. Be responsible with it, though, and give back to your community. That's where
right.
It all went south. I'd say it went south just after Eisenhower, you know? I mean, I was raised by a Republican family from upstate New York, politically involved, and I was raised to always give back to my community because it was my responsibility, Anita. My community provided my living. You know, like Elizabeth Warren says, Jesus, Elizabeth Warren sounds like my uncle, you know? And he was a Republican. These people that parade around as leaders right now, the majority of them are posers. What they're in it for, do you know why people go into politics anymore? And I think this has been going on for 20 years. I think
for money.
People go into politics, to make money, not to serve the community or a constituency. You should see how corrupt the Miami City Commission is. It's terrible. I mean, and at one time, I can remember the FBI, when I was just a little graveyard shift reporter for Sun Sentinel and Fort Lauderdale, I can remember the FBI, when we were all standing around getting ready, they were going to bust the outlaw motorcycle gang, and it was a BFD, and I was taking pictures, and I can remember hearing the FBI guy telling me, you know, Broward County is the most corrupt county in the whole country. And I thought, yeah, how long is that going to last? It's all of the counties, anywhere where there's large business.
Hmm.
You know? You were talking about Webster having that huge flea market there. How much corruption
right.
do you think there is involved in that?
How much what? Say that again.
Corruption.
I don't know. All I know is that Webster wouldn't even be Webster without the flea market. I mean, it's a little tiny one-horse town without a horse, and the only thing that's really there is maybe one or two restaurants, one or two gas stations, and the Webster flea market. So the whole town revolves around that since it's the largest flea market in the state of Florida. And I don't know.
Trying to
beat
the crap out of the swap shop, is it?
I'm sorry, say that again?
It kind of beating the crap out of the swap shop.
Yeah, I mean, this place is so big. There's actually two sections. There's the east side, the west side. There's a whole huge area which is sells nothing but wholesale items. And the whole town revolves around that Monday flea market. And for those of you that don't know what Webster Flea Market in Webster, Florida is, it's a huge, huge flea market. It spans acres and acres. You can go at any time and get a spot. It's only open on Mondays. So a lot of the people that just do vending as a living or even as a hobby or a pastime, most people that live near Webster will have a booth there on Mondays because they're working usually in the flea markets or the green markets Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And everybody can make it over to everybody can make it over to Webster on Monday, so it gives you like a fourth day. And,
well, now you've been down there. How do you do? How
We didn't do well, but we weren't in a good location, so we haven't been back. But that's not going to stop us from going there again. I mean, we just need to be in a different
local
area, like selling what we were selling, which was mostly like hippie stuff and tie-dye things. We were in an area right by the antiques where all the old people were. So, of course, that's rapidly changing because now we're being surprised by customers that are in their 60s wanting tie-dye shirts. But we figured we would have there's more foot traffic, I think, on the east side, and that's where we needed to be. So we're not closing, you know, that bridge. And at some point in the future, we'll probably go back, just not at the moment. Right now, we're doing something close to home, and it's 4 days: Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. We just finished up this afternoon for this week, and it gives us a little bit of gas money. Is really how it does. So there's no way you could live on it, is what I'm saying. It's just a little bit. But it is a way to get the stuff in the garage that we no longer need. And if you look on my Facebook page, you'll see I found a painting that was actually being sold online for $249. It was a print of a painting that was in my garage, professionally matted, professionally framed. And
really?
So now I posted it up on Yard Seller, and I'm hoping to get $300, and that's including shipping, because it's going to be expensive to ship.
Okay, so Yard Seller is another way for people to make a living through the Internet?
Yeah, you can do Yard Seller, which is YardSeller. Forget the E in there. It's just Yard Seller. Then, of course, there's Etsy, there's eBay, and there's Craigslist. I think all of those are pretty valid options if you want to sell and vend, just doing it online, you know. But I think a combination of the two could work depending on what you're selling. So,
yeah.
You know. So 4 days of the week I'm doing that, and 3 days of the week I'm working with Tricia with ESP Botanicals. So that's what I would consider my real job, and I don't get a day off. Right now I don't get a day off. So.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah, so it's really exhausting,
no,
but I'm learning a new trade, let's put it that way.
So it's... Well, and that's a good thing. So we're learning to cobble together living, right?
Right.
Gotcha.
Right.
So that's a really good thing.
Oh, yeah.
And
this is the funniest thing. This just crossed into my inbox. So speaking of the war on women... This is a website called Jezebel.com. To all you crafters there that may be listening, and to anybody who knits, there has been a call to knit a uterus to donate to a congressman in need.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's a picture of this. It says, "Remember when we decided that Rick Santorum needed a uterus of his very own so he'd leave ours alone? Well, now there's a similar idea being proposed for the members of Congress across this great land who seem so insistent on getting all up in our lady parts since they're jealous they don't have any of their own. So how exactly are we going to make that happen since we can't, you know, give them actual uteruses? Enter government-free VJJ, a project which aims to have ladies knit or crochet lovely versions of uteruses, plus cervixes and vulvas, and mail them to our representatives. If you've got some spare time, know how to knit or crochet, pick one of these patterns or devise your own, fill out this form so we can keep track of who's getting what, and then mail off the finished product to the statesman of your choice. It might not end the war on women, but at least it will give our beloved representative something soft to cuddle when they have nightmares about slut demons and whore monsters taking over the world with our birth control-riddled, Godzilla-sized vaginas. And there's pictures.
That is unbelievable.
So I'm going to take this link right now, and I'm going to go to wisewomenmedia.posteris.com, and in the comment under this show, I'm going to post this link so y'all can check it out yourself. So I think I might knit a uterus for, you know, Governor Scott. What do you think of that?
I think that's an excellent idea, and it has a lot of good taste, a lot of good taste to it, you know?
Well, they can't, they're not going to deny it when they get a uterus in the mail.
What the fuck are you talking about? Well, and here's the thing, too. I mean, you know, I'm right down the street from where Rush Limbaugh spews his filth. And everyone is so, you know, the thing that I hate is the cynicism. I really hate the cynical nature that we get after a while. I've not gotten it yet, but I get the opposite. I'll get depressed. I have to back away from it. But here's the thing. We got Limbaugh down the street here spewing his soap, and everybody's so cynical. They're saying that, you know, there's just no way that you're going to kick him off the air. Well, probably not. But he certainly doesn't have right now what he had a month ago as far as support on the financial side or even the political side. He's lost the majority of it. And the other part to that is that, you know, for Rush Limbaugh, it's all about being able to, you know, open his big fat mouth and have the constituency roar back his view to the candidates or to the legislature, and they buckle under to them. We've seen that for how long? Since Obama was elected, right?
Right, exactly.
So
exactly.
I got this feeling that he's lost that, especially since there's a lot of women out there who are looking up, and I mean, you know, tug on the goddess's skirt. He's got Gloria Steinem, Jane Fonda, and Linda Morgan writing an op-ed on CNN where they're suggesting, and I guess they've taken action by sending a formal request and letter of request to the FCC, and they've made the complaints, the proper complaints, because they suggest, and it's quite true, that what Mr. Limbaugh has done is to create a subhuman definition and description of women,
right,
in the public discourse, and that is not free speech. There's a criminal nature there.
Yeah, and I don't think a lot of people get that yet. I think we who have been clued in get it, but there's many that don't. And
well, have you also been listening to, now I take issue with it, Bill Maher on his Friday version of Real Time had Pelosi's daughter did a film where she has gone into Alabama and some of the Deep South states, and she's recording these, you know, absolute stereotypes of, you know, the farmer in the field with the UFO story type of thing. These are people who are, you know, they don't have all their teeth in their mouth. They're basically ignorant as they can be. They're itinerant, and they're getting food stamps. They're on all kinds of government assistance, and yet they are, you know, xenophobic or just plain old racist bastards who are out there talking about the way things were and how the GOP will make it so again. And they're saying that this is, you know, 54% of the GOP, this is them in the Deep South, and they think Muslims are, they think that the president is a Muslim. And I kind of resent this kind of marginalizing of the Deep South. I really do. And, you know, I'm born a Yankee, but I was down here at two, and even though I went back and forth, I still, and they'll tell you, oh, well, South Florida is not. I heard Nicole Sandler do it. She played this tape on her show, and by the way, I like Nicole Sandler. She's a really good progressive radio show every morning. She is continuing this marginalization of people like the GOP isn't standing over there, the ones who can think for themselves, standing over there and calling us liberals. And I mean, do I have to bring up people like that thing, Coulter, or, you know, anyone, or Breitbart? Of course, I'm talking about people who are close to dead and dead, but you know what I'm saying here, Anita. I'm saying that they marginalize the Deep South. It's just not the right way to go about it. And I think that with everything that's going on in the Gulf right now, which is the Deep South, and all of the need we have for attention to what is being done and ignored by the White House and what's being done by, you know, done and not done by BP to marginalize the Deep South, the way that they are for political rhetoric and points, is terribly wrong. And there's something wrong with that. Progressives should hear it. Liberals who are doing this should hear it back right in their faces, because we have a terrible problem down here that's being ignored. And they're talking about not even 54% of the people, but just the registered, you know, Republicans that think that Mr. Obama is a Muslim. I think this is terrible.
Mm-hmm. Well, even if he was, to me, that wouldn't would that bother anybody if we have religious freedom in this country? I mean, that doesn't make any sense.
You betcha. I'm with you, honey. You are right. But to do some comedic point shots and some political point shots off of the Deep South right now, you know, with this old bullshit routine of, you know, the deliverance dueling banjos behind them. You know, this is crap, because we have a crisis down here in Deep South states. I mean, cultures are being lost down here. There's an industry on its ass. There's more than one industry on its ass. And they're going to marginalize the Deep South? I think it's fucked. And I think every progressive that's doing it ought to be hit flat back with it. I think they should be, you know, it's an opportunity for anyone to say, hey, wait a minute here. You know, you're marginalizing the South at a time when the South needs a spotlight on it for the real problems that are going on and real people, intelligent people, who are doing their very best. I think of the gals at the coalition, the Alabama coalition. I think of the Coastal Warriors gals. I think of Sheree Foytlin. I think, and Sheree Foytlin, by the way, is someone I would hold up as an up and coming, a leader in a movement of activism in this country right now, who should not be, you know, her state, which is Deep South, should not be marginalized. She should be heralded as someone to look at and listen to her messaging and what is wrong in the Deep South, instead of the MSM bullshit, the corporate walls that are up, and listening to, frankly, assholes like Bill Maher take point shots. You know, that's just me
right.
talking on your show, I know, but shit.
This media that could not even report, for instance, on Sherry's march to D.C., I mean, there was very little of these stories being reported on.
Local radio was local AM radio in Mississippi and Alabama and Louisiana. They were reporting on her, and so were we. And it just goes to show you, that
but a great many of Americans never heard that story. A great many
right.
of Americans. So many Americans don't listen to alternative media. They just listen.
No, they have no idea. And the other thing is that we have got a whole of a lot of battles to face, to draw the line in the sand during this election year. Once again, the tar sands, I say again, they should be right in front of the White House. And you know, there were some people there who actually were media worthy, people like Margot Kidder and Daryl Hannah, and who's the young actor who was spearheading that? Ooh, terrible menopause. But you know what I'm saying. And I'll tell you what, I think that when we start up with actions again, I think that people like, Goddess Bless Amy Goodman, and Democracy Now, and of course Keith Olbermann, because he does report it. He came back from vacation just so he could start reporting on Occupy when it started. You know?
Wow, that's amazing. We're going into our last couple of minutes on the show here, and as usual, the two hours just fly by really quick. I mean, it's like I could sit here and talk for another 2 hours, but I'm getting hungry. So, but in any case, we have some special guests lined up for the next couple weeks. We were going to have one of them tonight, but the timing was off. Not the show, the date of the show, but the actual time of the show. So we may kind of play around and see if a pre-record might work for some of these shows too. So we can get the interviews that people really want to hear.
There you go.
And we're not locked into a specific time with the actual interviewee. So, Gwen, did you have any parting thoughts or statements about?
Just to say that this week we're still on hiatus with Mike Chuck on Friday and the consciousness shift, but on Sunday I will be returning to the shows, and so will Jack, and we'll have Nick with us on consciousness shift with guests coming up, so to Sunday we begin again. We're off vacation, and I thank you very much for inviting me on with you this evening.
And it was fun, as usual, but thanks for coming on. But we want to wish all of our listeners a very happy equinox, spring
equinox,
and the new moon, and Persephone rising, and we can start all these new things all fresh. That's what spring makes me feel like, green, fresh, new things, and things budding and blooming. So
it is a time. It's the season of hope and renewal, but it's also equinox. Remember, it's equal day for night tomorrow, and in that there is big magic, you know. Look for your balance.
Right. So we want to say thanks for our sponsors, Here Be Monsters, Daughters of Isis, Roundtree 7, the Hoodoo Blog. We also have a link on our blog. If you can donate, dig deep. $5 helps keep this show on the air. So see us at wisewomenmedia.posteris.com. And we'll see you next week, same time, same channel. You all have a great night and a great Sabbat tomorrow. Bye.
Good night, Anita.
Good night.